Hello, and welcome to episode one of Ad Astral, podcasting DJ Burnham's short stories. DJ Burnham has been writing short science fiction stories since 2004, many of which have appeared on webzines such as Silverthought and Bewildering Stories. In 2005, one of his stories was published as part of a speculative fiction anthology, Silverthought Ignition. The first volume of his short stories, Test Drive, was published in 2007, and there's a novel in the pipeline. Over time, we hope to bring you tales from the near and distant future, as well as alien worlds and alternative realities, from the commonplace to the downright weird. We also plan to have some guest voice actors, and to attempt to conjure up some entertaining audio environments in which to set the stories. Bid, our first story, features a green-fingered mystery man who vanishes, leaving a trail of clues on a futuristic internet auction site which has expanded its horizons to distant planets. Bid first appeared in Test Drive, Volume 1 of DJ Burnham's collected short stories. Hope you enjoy it, and see you on the other side. Ad Astral presents Bid by DJ Burnham. Detective Crozzo scratched his capacious belly, yawned loudly, and flopped into the well-worn chair, as equally well-upholstered as its owner. The chair groaned indignantly as he spun round to face the monitor. Placing the outstretched fingers of his right hand on the screen and looking straight into the optical reader perched on top of the monitor, a biometric sweep confirmed his identity. The infrared upload from his pocket notemate opened the application directly into the source of his inquiries. He was connected to Uniporium's High Security Members Archive profile search, and he grumpily punched in the next set of codes and passwords. He looked up at the tatty state of the wall behind the monitor. Successive safety posters, monthly target statements, promotional announcements, and scantily clad pin-ups had all taken their toll on the paintwork. His superiors had the most swanky plush offices imaginable. Surely a little of their seemingly infinite resources could find their way down to the likes of him. An old-fashioned wall-mounted clock clunked 11:10. Crozzo sighed. It was the start of another long night, but at least he wouldn't have anyone breathing down his neck. Sweating heavily, the aircon had packed up months ago, he ran a stained handkerchief over his balding head and refocused his attention on the screen as a jarringly cheerful tune announced the completion of the download. A list of options presented themselves below Uniporium's corporate logo and company policy statements. A pre-recorded introductory message followed.
Every effort will be made to help you with your inquiries. If you're unable to locate any specific information through the links presented on this page, then please try our recently upgraded online search facility. If you have any further queries, then please contact us via one of the official channels listed below, and we will do our very best to assist you.
Crozzo rarely had to resort to direct contact. He pressed the on-screen profile button and resignedly watched it build while absently stirring a mug of oversweetened hypercaf. The subject's feedback profile showed a staggering 3,275,018 transactions, with a remarkably impressive 98.6% positive feedback. Crozzo whistled when he saw the figure. It wasn't every day of the week that he saw those kinds of numbers. He broke them down into annual chronological reports. It started with a characteristic pattern of a few tentative purchases, then a few sales, and then a few more transactions, as the fledgling member gradually gained confidence. With 4,000 sales in the first 2 years, at 100% positive feedback, this individual had taken to it like a duck to water. With only an occasional order being flagged for lost shipment or transit damage, his reputation was firmly established as an excellent trader, swiftly tracking or replacing any disputed orders, such that any customers who'd hastily posted negative feedback soon retracted it, and even added extra hits to his high-volume recommended seller ultra profile.
This one's going to be a lot more interesting than the usual nonsense, Crotso muttered to himself. All right, member ID Green Finger 101. Let's see your story then.
He cherry-picked specific item pages, feedback comments, website links both world and sector-wide, sales peaks and troughs, bid success records and purchase versus sales throughput ratios. In the 7-year super profile that Crotso knitted together, it told the story of changing markets, shifting fashion and grasped opportunities. The item descriptions told him how this extraordinary individual had got started and how his career had unfolded. By the morning, he would know a great deal more about Greenfinger 101, a.k.a. Marty Gattenborough. Like most people, Greenfinger 101 started off buying a few vid discs and selling a random range of used articles for which he had no further use. As time went on, he started to specialise in items relating to the activity of gardening, hence the member ID name that he'd chosen for himself. The more common items were gloves and kneeling pads and, as Marty had been working for the State Pleasure Parks Department at the time, Crotso suspected that many of these items had been liberated from the storerooms of Greenfinger 101's employers, but that was of no concern to him. Within a year, he was selling a wide range of gardening products, from robo-mowers to self-tumbling compost makers. One of the most popular lines, for which he was sole distributor in those early days, was the Aero Hopper. Essentially, it was a souped-up pogo stick with gas injection spring kicker and a single detachable tine. Parents snapped them up for their children to bounce around on their lawns. Come springtime, the flat-based pad on the tip of the Aero Hopper could be exchanged for the tine, shaped like a long apple corer, and as the children bounced around, they cut out small holes in the turf to facilitate aeration and lawn health. A secondary mid-air gas kick would shoot the core of earth and grass out in readiness for the next cut. The Global Safety Commission had serious worries about the initial design and the fact that the units were being used by children. As a consequence, Marty employed a product supervisor and technical consultant and, following a few adaptations, it went back on the market to great success. True to character, despite considerable development costs, Marty ensured that a fair percentage of every sale found its way back directly to the original inventor. Another Greenfinger 101 coup was when he won the distribution contract for automated garden units. These were especially successful with the corporate sector for use outside hotels, restaurants, company headquarters, civic buildings and the like. Each unit measured 80 centimetres by 80 centimetres square by 40 centimetres deep and slotted together in any desired combination, creating an amazing variety of shrub and flower borders. Each unit was programmed for optimum conditions for its specific contents and connected to a water supply for self-regulated watering and feeding, as well as having sensitive, organic, bio-friendly pest control mechanisms and the attractive feature of accelerated hydroponics for rapid, lush growth. He could easily have sold these units through a separate internet site without having to pay any insertion fees or sales commissions, but it had become obvious to Crotso from quite early on that this individual was addicted to the auction site selling method. As Crotso explored the Me section of Greenfinger 101's members profile, he found full product range support links and more satisfied customer comments and product reviews, but nowhere was there a photographic image or any personal details. It was only in the depths of Uniporium's high-security data pool that he'd been able to find out that his real name was Marty Gattenborough, and that his private address on the West Coast had been replaced by that of a warehouse on Earth. As Greenfinger 101's sales expanded into more varied and fanciful products, it seemed as though his career was in an unstoppable ascendant. The AeroHopper led to a whole range of gas injection power gardening tools, and they took off in every sense of the word. For the elderly and infirm, it gave them the chance to get back into gardening again, and for those with busy lifestyles, they could dig over a patch of ground in next to no time with a minimum of effort. One touch of a button propelled the fork or spade into the ground, followed by another button which activated a bracing spur, facilitating the forceful flicking action that turned the earth over. Each action was controlled from an oil-damped, shock-absorbent handle that totally protected the operator from recoil shock transmission to their hands. With another clever adaptation of the AeroHopper, the tool could then be bounced to a preset distance in readiness for the next digging action. No more backache, coupled with beautifully precise balancing and design, saw these tools outselling anything else in his recently rented warehouse. Then, the original Earth-based auction site expanded its horizons throughout the sector to create uniporium.co.sect. As luck would have it, Greenfinger 101 had just started selling a new weeding device, which could be readily adapted for the new off-world market. It resembled an antiquated metal detector and could easily be programmed for selective weeding or seedling stroke plant removal. An initial sweep of the garden logged all of the species growing in it. This information was matched, via a download from the manufacturer's website, and every plant could be identified, presenting an analysis of their growth behaviour, flowering characteristics, and optimum conditions for growth. Even the most amateur gardener could then set the apparatus to deftly remove all unwanted plants from around those which he or she wished to retain and nurture. Rows of little tweezers, as well as miniature loppers and grabbers, would spring from flaps on the undersurface of the device, removing targeted species at lightning speed, and even delivering tiny jets of flame directly into the core of the more resistant strains. The manufacturer, for whom Greenfinger 101 was acting as sole distributor, as usual, swiftly downloaded plant databases from a growing number of alien worlds with a potential market for their products. Sales growth was exponential. A deal was struck between Greenfinger 101 and Uniporium's favoured sector-wide freight company, such that Marty's shipping costs were virtually unbeatable by any competitor. With a vested interest, he quickly excelled in modern hypertext markup language, producing graphics and item descriptions which, along with off-world font types, would make his products irresistible to target alien worlds, as well as taking a crash course in the cultures of those new world marketplaces. Before long, his off-world sales were outstripping his domestic transactions. Inventors flocked to Marty with increasingly fanciful innovations for the new markets, always making contact via Uniporium, never meeting him in person. By now, he could afford to take a few risks and test the water, especially with a full money-back guarantee if the buyer wasn't totally satisfied. As off-world passion for horticulture grew, as quickly as the plants themselves, he began to sell more and more extraordinary items, such as secateurs with enlarged grips which were contoured to fit reptilian hands, and trowels specifically designed for tentacle use.
Comfy.
In one bizarre case, the occupants of a planet were essentially plants themselves, and, despite being appalled by many of the products on offer, considering them as no less than instruments of torture, the hydroponic units were greeted with tremendous enthusiasm, so much so that an entirely new form of cuisine took off on their world. Ironically, the one thing that Greenfinger 101 wasn't allowed to sell were living plants from Earth. There was considerable, and probably justifiable, concern from the alien worlds that non-native plants might harbour disease or spread in an uncontrollable manner and outcompete their own flora and fauna. 4 years after Marty had sold his first item on the Earth-based auction site, the answer came in the form of a planet called Molin, which was recovering from centuries of atmospheric pollution. The native plants of Molin were incredibly sensitive to ultraviolet solar radiation and, as a consequence of the atmospheric damage caused by the Molin inhabitants' reckless use of fossil fuels, the plants had all but died out. Just a handful remained in a horticultural museum, with UV filters on the vast glass panels. But it was thanks to Greenfinger 101's hydroponic units that they had flourished, although it would be a few hundred years before Molin's atmosphere recovered sufficiently to enable them to be planted outside again. During one of his market assessments, Greenfinger 101 had learned of the disaster on Molin and shrewdly made a gift of the hydroponic units. In truth, if the plants did well, he'd hoped that they might buy a few other items of equipment from him. But in fact, the knock-on effect was quite unexpected. The state governors of Molin asked him if he would consider helping them to research the possibility of cultivating earth plants on their planet, with a view to refoliation and the re-establishment of viable agricultural districts. Happily, Marty had a few experts up his sleeve and enough credit to finance the setup of an hermetically sealed research nursery on Molin. Using a combination of hydroponics and native soil, they were soon cultivating a wide range of UV-tolerant plants from seed, much to the delight of the state governors. Several months of rigorous testing convinced the Molin biologists that the species selection would present no danger to the eventual reintroduction of their own native species. There could be no risk of inadvertently introducing pests or diseases, as having grown the plants from seed in sterile conditions, it was akin to them having been grown on Molin herself. Some of the seeds refused to germinate on Molin soil, but many of those could still be raised hydroponically and then be transplanted once they've matured into sturdier specimens. In next to no time, Greenfinger 101's team were selling vegetable stock to farmers and flowering plants to the domestic market, all at knockdown prices thanks to the sheer bulk being shifted. Roses, oleanders, bougainvillea, pelargoniums and flowering cacti all sprang up in the previously impoverished, desperate gardens of Molin. Out in the long, empty fields, tomatoes, potatoes, beans, peppers, aubergines, fruit trees, melons, and a whole range of food source plants romped away in the long, sunny days offered by Molin's summer. With burgeoning reforestation projects, the associated photosynthesis began to have tangible effects on both the atmosphere and climate of the planet. So much so that the people of Molin began to look forward to a day when they could once more breathe the outside air unassisted. However, before the long-term benefits were felt on Molin, Greenfinger 101 was expanding his pioneering cultivation techniques to other planets, considerably more fortunate than Molin environmentally, but caught up in the rapidly spreading fashion for gardening. Marty took out huge speculative loans from companies based not only on Earth, but also on several other wealthy planets, convinced that the market could sustain the expanding interest. With a variety of climates and atmospheric conditions, some of those worlds were able to support a wide range of Earth plants. He looked to colder conditions on his home planet for those specimens which would do well on planets far from their sun, and to more equatorial or desert-based flora for planets which were sunbaked, or even for those that had two or more suns and consequently much longer days. 6 years since those first tentative bids and sales, Marty had established nurseries on 10 different planets across the sector, and sales had been brisk, up until recently. On planet Zelphi, the gravitational forces were twice those found on Earth. At first, his plants had looked to be doing okay, but the hydroponically accelerated trees had far less time than their native counterparts to build tougher, thicker cell walls into their structures and were steadily crushed by Zelphi's relentless gravity. The answer, of course, was to grow them more slowly in order to allow them to adapt, crossbreed, and evolve. But the Zelphians were an impatient race, and under a deluge of complaints about collapsed and rotting plant matter, Marty had no option but to close that particular nursery. Worse was to follow. He'd assumed that although the Zelphi project had failed, that the others would be able to sustain the outstanding loan and interest payments. For a time, this was true, especially as by now the garden tool market was expanding at an even greater rate than that of the actual plant sales. Unfortunately, he'd failed to make a full appraisal of business practice legislation on two other planets, and this was to be the beginning of the end. Marketing was one thing, supply and delivery infrastructure another, as was product quality control and backup, all factors which were essential for assured success, and Marty excelled in them all. However, some things just didn't work the same way they did back on Earth. On the two planets in question, he had competition, and serious competition at that. Replicas of his tools and gardening advice books had started to flood the market, all skillfully recreated and cheaply produced. He issued writs for copyright infringements, payrolling some of the most accomplished alien lawyers he could afford. His competitors did the same. What was revealed on planet Trutza was that the copyright had indeed been infringed, but the law governing that issue only applied to registrations made by Trutzians themselves. Had he known that in advance, it would have been a simple question of accrediting some of his trusted Trutzian employees with the design rights and registering the copyrights in their names. That would have carried an element of risk in itself, but nothing like the damage caused by the ensuing free-for-all on sales. On Trulta 4, he lost the case to laws concerning family-based market status rights. Bizarre by Earth standards, but cast iron by theirs. Obviously Marty wasn't from Trulta 4, but none of his employees had the requisite birthrights that might permit him to transfer total business ownership for that planet. He couldn't even act as an off-world director. More loans were cancelled and things started to get nasty. Before long, Marty was forced to sell all of his off-world businesses at rock-bottom prices just to pay off the less forgiving financiers. All that left was his Earth-based business, and that faced a new threat. Sales on his innovative equipment had levelled off, primarily because he'd taken his eye off the ball. Others had cleverly circumnavigated the copyright on his automated garden units by drastically altering the design, and had introduced attractive maintenance contract packages. Big business had effectively whipped the carpet from under him, and a saturated market could only mean a steady decline. Had it not been for one last massive loan, then he would have been in with a chance. But he was still obsessed with Uniporium, and this really wasn't the time to be buying and selling at a loss. Like any addict, his habit was his undoing, and the final demand was reaching a terrifying level. 2 months after those final transactions, there was a steadily building list of unresolved complaints gathering in Uniporium's dispute console. Despite the ensuing negative feedback, it had little effect on Greenfinger 101's member profile, due in part to its enormity, but also due to the fact that Uniporium had discontinued the account due to a lack of response from Marty. Uniporium's Complaints Resolution Department were keen to speak to Greenfinger 101, and this was how Detective Crozzo had become involved. Crozzo approached the Molin financiers, who'd been the last to call in the debt. Their tolerance had been largely due to the influence brought to bear on them by the state governors, who were still grateful to Marty for his assistance in their time of need 3 years previously. But even that had its limits. It ended up with a threat of a lengthy prison sentence in a Molin penal colony, renowned for its harsh regime and seemingly at odds with the planet's overall temperament. However, Crozzo was in for a surprise. Not only had the loan been paid in full, but the funds had been transferred just 4 weeks ago. That should have been impossible, because Greenfinger 101 had ceased trading 1 month before the transfer was made, and closure of related accounts would have removed any source of funds. At least, that was the way it seemed on the surface. With further investigation, it was confirmed that every one of Greenfinger 101's sales transactions had been paid via Uniporium's Credtran, and then those funds had been withdrawn and paid into one of 8 linked accounts in Marty's name. One on Earth and 7 off-world. Every payment, transfer and statement checked out, and every account had been closed prior to the Molin loan repayment. So where had the money come from? Crozzo accessed the Molin financier's company bank account and located the payment details. It was characteristic tenacity and another hour's skillful detective work that enabled Crozzo to trace the route by which the money had finally arrived at the Molin account. It had been moved around with such guile that he had a sneaking admiration for the way in which it had been achieved, but at the same time it raised his suspicions to new heights. He followed the purchase of intoxicants, the sale of rare artifacts, cargoes being bought and sold and freighted around the sector like a huge pinball. The momentum of the transfers and the changing of planetary currencies were extraordinary, and, were it not for his uncanny feel in these matters, the trail would have gone rapidly cold. Eventually, it stopped at a space dock on the perimeter of Sector Space. Details of the cargo were hazy, but it had been carried by a small hyper-jumping space jet which had docked for the minimum time to allow for refueling and offloading. Space dock records showed another 5 ships leaving soon after, but each one checked out as legitimate. That line of inquiry had all but run out, when one last search threw up a chance photo ID at Earth's own orbiting spaceport. It was the first and last sighting of Marty Gattenborough. He'd never left Earth before, always working via his employees on off-world projects. This time, he'd used the last of his money from the sale of his computer to fund his photo ID verification, take a hyper shuttle to the spaceport, and go through embarkation control. Kropso backtracked and ran a crossmatch on any Uniporium cells in the past 3 weeks that fitted the Molin loan sum. It was such a large amount, at 900,000 unicreds, that only one item flagged.
Oh, you idiot.
Kropso cursed himself for not thinking of it sooner. Marty had been addicted to Uniporium, and it seemed entirely logical that he would try this. Registering as a new member, he had put an item up for bid on a 24-hour sale basis. The item details would have been indecipherable to most people and considered some kind of error, especially having been listed in the gardening category. This was how it appeared. For sale, 1 H unit, GF-101, used but in good condition. Rare opportunity to acquire, buyer collects.
Good grief! Kropso exclaimed. He sold himself!
The buyer's member ID was AD1475, but all that matched it was a cargo bay, on the same space dock that the funds for the Molin loan repayment had begun their tortuous journey. It was AD1475's first transaction, and had been won on a single buy-it-now basis, within 20 seconds of the item being listed. Obviously, the sale of humans was illegal, or any other planetary dominant species for that matter, but once in a while, one would slip through the net. Kropso turned off his terminal and left the rundown office, having submitted his report. Both Uniporium and his superior would read it tomorrow, and Kropso had added one final comment of his own at the bottom of the last page.
Somewhere in the sector, someone, or something, has a very beautiful garden.
Bid was written and narrated by DJ Burnham. Well, I hope you enjoyed episode 1. For further information, check out adastralpodcast.com and myspace.com/adastralpodcasts. For information on DJ Burnham's published writing and to see science fiction related artwork, visit djburnham.com and also myspace.com/DJ Burnham. If you subscribe to Ad Astral through iTunes, then you will automatically receive a free download of the next podcast. There are also alternative means of subscribing at adastralpodcast.com. I'd just like to give special thanks to Paul Davison for his podcasting expertise and advice. Paul hosts the Roy Harper podcast, and I'd thoroughly recommend checking it out at stormcock.net. Just a quick bit of legal bump. Ad Astral is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 2.0 UK England and Wales license. You can copy and distribute it for non-commercial purposes, but cannot alter the content and must attribute it to DJ Burnham and Ad Astral Podcast. Permissions beyond the scope of this license can be explored by contacting us via adastralpodcast.com. Just before we go, I'd like to mention Variant Frequencies, who podcast a DJ Burnham story called The Spoils of War in June 2006. You can check it out on their website, variantfrequencies.com, or access it via adastralpodcast.com. Rick Stringer also gave me some great advice on setting up this podcast, and Variant Frequencies produce some brilliant podcasts of their own. Here's a short trailer.
Variant Frequencies, your speculative fiction dial. Find us at www.variantfrequencies.com. Variant Frequencies is a podcast that stretches the entire bandwidth of genre fiction, modulated by a constant element of the fantastic. Every month, we give you a new story, so tune in, turn the volume up, and let some of our weird carrier waves distort your reality for just a little while.
Variant Frequencies, well worth checking out. Well, bye for now, and look out for the next episode of Ad Astral. Thank you.